When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
G'day Filth, it's Ben here, just letting you know that Adam and I have brought back Arya Talking to Me. That's right, our Game of Thrones podcast is back for House of the Dragon, the brand new spin-off. We've already released one episode, which is a preview, and we'll be recapping and reviewing every episode of House of the Dragon as it drops live. So if you are interested in that, please look up Arya Talking to Me on your chosen podcast app. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. If you have thoughts about the show, please get in touch with us on the socials. But for now, please enjoy this episode of Filthy Casuals.
It's a journey into a land of fantasy through complicated mazes where you use your wits to kill your enemies before they kill you, all in a quest for wealth and power.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games, hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always...
It's Ben Vanel here, Tommy. Finally, we've got a fourth voice on the show to add a little bit of, I guess, actual knowledge, right? We talk about us being kind of knowledgeable boys. As this fourth host is giving me the thumbs up and saying, is mouthing, yes, I'm really knowledgeable about video games. I'm super credible.
I love the power move of introducing a guest before we've even got the third host on mic yet. It's just wild stuff.
I'm of course talking about Adam Knox.
Yeah, yes. I'm going to be doing a fourth voice for this podcast. I'm very excited to introduce the knowledgeable games journalist. I'm from Kotaku. Hello.
We do have a special guest joining us today. Very exciting. An actual journalist to class the join up around here. You may have seen her writing on Kotaku. Please welcome onto the show Ruby Innes. Yes.
Hooray. Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me. I don't know if I can legally be called a journalist yet. I haven't released anything informative, factual, good. I think once that happens, you can start calling me a journalist. You know, I'll be all up in them ethics, whatever.
this is your journalistic debut. In that case, if those are the requirements, this is going to be informative, high quality, very dangerous in some parts of the world. This is the breakthrough moment for you, I believe. You're welcome.
I'm so excited to speak a fact for the first time in my life because I do be lying.
What would be your dream scoop to get in at Kotaku? The thing that would really make you feel like you've earned it as a journalist?
Cookies and cream, probably.
Hell yes.
Nice.
We just released an episode of our bonus show where we ranked our top five favorite ice cream flavors. So that's great, a great tie-in. I don't know how you did that.
I'm literally the smartest person alive.
Yeah, fuck.
So you do, anyone who reads Kotaku will be familiar with your work by now because you've been there for a little bit and you seem to have been given pretty free rein of the joint. A lot of the other articles that pop up on there, you know, they kind of seems like they could have been written by anyone, but yours always stick out because you've just been given free license to put your grotty little drawings all over everything that you write, which I respect the hell out of. It's a great calling card.
Thank you. I don't know why they let me do it. I really don't. My editor the other day was like, hey, we need some weekend content. And I'm like, cool. And I just wrote up a thing called How to Make a Spaghetti Gaming Laptop. Bit of a sneak peek. It is literally just a series of drawings of putting spaghetti into a gaming laptop, closing it and putting Parmesan cheese on top. you know, just a light weekend read to really, like, get you in the mood to game.
The way dickheads on the internet treat Kotaku as well, I bet that'll come and they'll be like, that's not actually how you make a spaghetti gaming laptop.
I've been making spaghetti gaming laptops for about 25 years now, and let me tell you, you actually put the spaghetti on the back, so fuck you, you dumb slut, eat a dick, I hate you, die.
I've seen just come up breaking news, Jason Schreier is reporting on bad labor conditions in the spaghetti gaming factory. The chefs, they're not getting paid enough.
He's dough. Next book.
Okay. That's not
spaghetti
true.
Made
why
of dough.
We should be doing it from home.
Yeah, classic.
I do wish
dough.
I wish more media would combine the written pieces, the journalism with the comic strip section out the back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Get Jim calling Jim Davis and going, why don't you put a few thoughts under that? You know, why don't you pen a couple little think pieces next to this little Garfield?
Nah, keep them separate. I don't want Garfield telling me like, oh no, the withdrawal from Afghanistan must have happened on a Monday because it's gone badly. Like,
oh no! But that's the thing. Like, my mantra has always been with my writing. If there's any space to put a stupid little fuck there, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time there is. Obviously, when I'm doing kind of serious stories, I can't be like, and here's some guy called Tumpus, because that's not going to work. But like with the odd silly post,
yes.
I can add some guy called Tumpus. And, you know, he's an integral part to the news story.
You're going to notice a bad labor practice story out of some company and Mr. Tumpus is the head of like the QA department that's been working people down. It's going to be so hard for you not to draw him as like a weird little marshmallow
guy.
Hi,
my name's Gungi Tumpus. I'm a whistleblower. Like, fuck!
From THQ Nordic or somewhere, I assume. One of the Scandinavian places. Mr. Tumpus. I like how.
Yeah, I did notice.
I like Tommy how you
the story on there. Yeah, sorry.
I like how you worked up a bit of stand up about Ruby's job practices. How you segued into your what if Garfield had a? It's good preparation. That was
right off the dome. No. But I tell you what, it probably should be going in the act.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we got what do we got? We got a couple of news stories that you floated before we started recording, Ben.
Yes,
a bit of newswire action for us.
Usually, this is Adam Knox's news corner. I guess I've taken control because Adam was, I assume, literally asleep until 15 minutes ago.
Until about 8 minutes ago, yeah. I don't know how long we've been recording, but like, I woke up, answered this call, saw a squirrel, got real excited. Now we're recording. I'm looking through a little bit of news at the moment, but you know what, Ben?
Yeah.
Take the reins.
This is like a bit of digging because honestly, it's been a quiet week or so. We didn't address this on last week's show, and I believe, you know, we're derelict in our duty because this is right up our alley. We've been talking about this for a long time. Forspoken, that game that we don't have that much interest in and has been delayed at least a couple of times, released what might be the worst trailer for any entertainment property of all time. We talked about this in the group chat, but it's fucking bad.
What are your thoughts, Ruby? I want to, like, where do you land on what you've seen of Forspoken? Because I feel bad about trashing something too deeply that you might be interested in.
Yeah, this is actually like my favorite game. Fuck off. But like the thing, what's goofy and silly about it is like before that trailer, pretty much all of like the media coverage of the game was actually quite serious, and all of the advertising of the game was pretty serious. Like it seemed like it was going to be quite a, you know, emotional, like in-depth story, which is allowed, it's legal. But what for got now. Me was like, that's been, yeah, for now. No feelings, no emotions, this, you know, going ahead. It's all illegal. Anyway, so like the thing that gets me is like doing that for so long and then after, you know, delaying and not giving too much information and yada, 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 after all that, coming back with like a record scratch, you're probably wondering how I got here type thing. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So everyone, yeah. Of course everybody's dunking on it. It's fucking weird.
Yes, that's a I great point. Like if this was a trailer for the new Avengers MCU game, like that's what we're used to. That is literally their house style, but... Yeah, you're right. It's so incongruous with all that boring stuff that came beforehand.
Well, I feel like the main character in some of those longer trailers, we'd kind of notice like, oh, she's pretty like quippy, pretty, you know, that generic kind of like sub-Buffy dialogue kind of like... No, I can't remember what any of them say. I'm so creative that I can't even try to be uncreative.
It's not like you were going into like a Poindexter.
Yeah. Some, you know, whatever. I'm out there, Jerry, stuff. And this didn't break for me from how it seemed like the kind of quippiness of the game was going to be. From those early trailers, but that is also something that particularly annoys me. So like when it sniffs a bit of it, then I get annoyed. But and I saw people like talking about this trailer being like, I refuse to believe Amy Hennig wrote this and all this stuff, but
right.
It's not that far off. If you diluted Uncharted a little bit, you know, Nathan Drake was pretty like, well, you know.
Yeah. I think
he's not a funny guy.
He's not particularly funny. I've never...
No, but he thinks he is.
Yeah.
But this is egregious. This is like... It almost was literally, like the record scratch thing, Ruby. It was like, so look, let me get this straight. And I think saying, I'm seeing freaking dragons is the one that really puts it over the edge for me. I'm seeing freaking dragons.
Who are you censoring yourself for? Yeah.
That one as well of her like going back to going to a crazy fantasy world, be like, I'm talking to my wrist. And like, watchers do that now. You can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was honestly expecting at one point for her to be like, and there's heckin' doggos here.
Oh, yeah.
Like that close.
Yeah.
That
close. I bet it's in there. I bet it's actually in there.
It'll be in the game.
Because I think
when the heckin' dog.
When the reveal of it first came out, I think we were all kind of a bit like the whole premise of the game being that you're like a fish out of water who's gone, you know, back into this fantasy world. And we were kind of wondering, well, how, like, as a film premise, that's something. But how does that really manifest itself in a video game where you're just, like, the whole fish out of water thing? You know what I mean? Like, you're just controlling a character. Like, it really makes no difference to the actual game, you know, whether this person is from modern times or not.
Mm.
But I think what we found the answer to that is how they're going to manifest that gameplay-wise is by making it incredibly annoying to play by having just modern world, quips and zingers being uttered by the character every 3 seconds.
Do you want to hear my impression?
If I wanted that, I'd play Gex.
Do you want to hear my impression of the writer of Forspoken reacting to people being annoyed by the trailer?
Please. Can we take a vote?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to go no.
All right, we've got two more votes remaining.
I want to hear it.
Okay, one vote yes from Ruby, one vote yes from Tommy. Sorry, Ben, but fuck off. this is my brand new impression of the writers for Forspoken reacting to the reaction to the Forspoken trailer. So that just happened. That's
okay.
Them.
All right.
There we go.
Yay!
Okay.
Yeah. That is what happened. It was a good impression, I thought.
So good.
Yeah. I think that the trailer's bad. I think the game looks awful. Woo. I think everyone involved in the making of it should be absolutely ashamed of themselves and are some of the worst people that have ever walked the... Why are you guys... They're behind me, aren't they?
Don't look, but they're about to bonk you on your silly little head.
So yeah, it's a magic no cap.
It looks incredible. The graphics are very good and all of that stuff. I hope that it's fun to play. It's just it's cool in a way, weirdly, and sort of satisfying to see people turning on this type of writing. Like seeing that little zeitgeist shift is sort of nice in a way.
Yeah.
The idea that might drift off after people have, you know, seen 450 Marvel movies that have done it, that's promising.
Yeah, we haven't got a lot of like huge predictions correct on this show, but being anti-quip, we've been staunch on for years now.
I think the world's kind of caught up to us. I saw someone in our Discord say like, you know, I think the game visually looks great. This might be one to you know, just play with the sound off, and just listen to a podcast while I'm playing instead. And I like to imagine that person perhaps putting us on and just maybe lasting like 7 minutes and being like, actually, though.
That's the thing. It does look visually quite beautiful. But if you, they put so much focus on like the voice acting and how, you know, huge the story is going to be in their advertising. So it comes back down to the advertising. Like if you're doing so much of that and it ends up being completely way off course of what everybody, you know, was shown, then it's gonna be stink. Like if you're gonna have the most beautiful, picturesque game in the world, but like a really, really bad quality, I'm gonna say like 144 kilobytes per second fucking Benny Hill theme is playing the whole time and you can't turn it down, then it's not gonna be an enjoyable experience.
Right. Yes. Right.
Yes.
It would be amazing Sonic 1 movie style if just like the backlash to this trailer, they turn around, they're like, guys, we've heard you. We're removing all traces of humor from the game. You've spoken.
No more jokes.
We've cut them all out.
Just go way too far in the other direction where now the character's always like, do you know the history of the black experience in America is actually really, really complicated and awful. And like, having to be like, oh, look, that sounds really important, but again, I might have to put a podcast on.
I miss the
quips. Then the podcast is exactly the same.
Yeah. I mean, they already delayed it, didn't they? They delayed it before they released this trailer. So, I mean, they can't do a double delay or triple delay just to fix the dialogue. I don't know. I imagine, because like you played that Immortals game, Nox, and particularly had an issue with the dialogue in that, which sounds pretty similar, honestly.
Yeah, it. There's so many games that do it. That Marvel game that came out, not to shit on Marvel all the time, but like that Marvel Avengers game that came out, what was that, a year or two ago?
Yeah.
Was a similar thing where just it's so hard to become invested in characters that don't speak like people. It completely takes you out of it when you can, you know, why is this fucking fantasy woman talking about, you know, this dragon can eat a bag of dicks? Like, it's not it's blank enough writing that it removes any character from the people that they're writing it for. So I imagine
at least with Avengers it's expected.
Right.
I think it was even more present in that game than even in like those Marvel ones, where it was like that blank writing, but then with weird, different looking versions of those characters that had also slightly blanker writing to them behind that. And there's 100 other games that do the same thing. That Immortals one was kind of one of them. But every second funny game is doing that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope there's a side quest in this where you have to. I really hope there's a side quest in this where you have to like go and teach like a medieval innkeeper like Liz Lemon quotes. Like if they just really lean into it, if that's like the storyline that you're actually you're actually changing this fantasy land for the worse by making
everyone
go, oh, what a week.
Every Fantasyland person there was like, what? Why, when you, every time you notice every time she fast travels with this little fast travel gem we've got, she keeps saying, I want to go to there. Why does she say that? It's if every character in the rest of the game.
I feel like it would only make sense if like every single person threatened to burn her on the stake.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. You're a full pariah.
Yeah. She is a witch. Yeah. Burn her. Like
they
that would make
sense. On the stake.
You know, I am against the Salem witch trials. I think they were all just high, but like, you know,
as
everyone's
about
got a
to
line.
Burn her, one of the people there calls her a douche canoe, and they're like, "Put him on as well.
Get the twat waffle.
You're also one." I'm so glad we burned all the witches. That's awesome sauce.
Okay, We got to move on from this because we could literally do these bad jokes for 45 minutes. Speaking of language, the director of John Wick is helming the Ghost of Tsushima movie. And he has said that he wants to do it all in Japanese, which I think is sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like the right move. He said, like, all Japanese cast, all Japanese dialogue. Japanese cameras. They'll be Sony.
Yeah, they all speak in Japanese.
They're all 36-year-old white men who are obsessed with Japan and speak fluent Japanese.
In the Japanese language, but in the style of the Ghost of Tsushima game before they patched it, none of the lip syncing will match up in this cut of the film, which I think would be awesome.
Okay. Yeah. The director isn't Japanese. I think he is a white guy. And I guess that's the same issue, I don't know if we all had an issue with it, with Ghost of Tsushima the game. It's like it was made by, like, was it?
Sucker Punch.
Yeah, Sucker Punch. So, like, they're in, like, Washington, I think. So,
yep.
I don't know. Do we have an opinion on this?
They did a great recreation of, like, that island, and I thought it all felt quite authentic, even if, you know, in literal terms it isn't. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know this. I guess I've seen John Wick. They're, like, action... choreographers from The Matrix, right? The
I think that was it,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So...
And the guy from it as well.
Huh?
You mean Keanu Reeves?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah. They got the guy from Matrix too. Mr. Matrix, yeah.
That's awesome. Reunion. That's awesome, Source.
Little reunion on the set. That must have been nice.
Yeah.
This is kind of a weird thing where it's like this. It's kind of how I feel about Last of Us being adapted. It's like the thing of the kind of the feedback loop of a video game that is kind of riffing on a genre of film.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about the game is like, oh, now you can, you know, you're kind of like playing through one of these films that you love, and then that being adapted back into a film thing, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Ghost of Tsushima is already like a very cinematic, like old Japanese samurai style of film. So I don't really know what there is to add to that genre. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, the game has taken so much influence from film that like feeding that snake back into itself, it feels like, well, what's the point of this going to be?
I mean, we had that with Uncharted as well. Like, it's the Indiana Jones ripoff that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we all thought was
an
absolute dog shit movie, right? Like, just
stink.
So successful, putrid. Which it's wild. That's like why Sony are doing this, and they're doing a Gran Turismo movie next year, apparently as well. The success of Uncharted.
Do the cars talk?
God, I hope so.
It's the
but
sequel,
only in Japanese.
The cars are the main character.
Yeah, they're only using Toyotas, and they speak Japanese. It's very authentic. I don't know, like they've. When we saw Uncharted, they cranked out the PlayStation Studios logo, like the MCU. They want to have their universe in films.
That was so
best
weird.
Part of the film.
Sitting in a cinema and like watching Sackboy be on screen for a bit.
Yeah.
And everyone in the cinema going, yes, Sackboy.
Yes, Knack the movie. Yes.
Woo.
But yeah, I don't know.
That
I think...
Uncharted movie was boring as hell.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine that, like, if you're taking a movie that I mean a game that the story of which, outside of like going on all those side missions, some of those are interesting, but was like relatively straightforward and thin, I thought, and then adapting that with the John Wick people, who, or I guess just one of the John Wick person, I don't know, it doesn't sound like it sounds like it'll be the same as the Uncharted thing, just like
yeah,
more pretentious, but then, though, potentially.
I don't know what... I don't remember. I assume we looked it up at the time. The track record of the people who made Uncharted. But John Wick is a good action movie. You know, like, it also has a pretty paper-thin story or plot, but it doesn't really matter. It probably is going to come down to casting and I guess, the way that they can reimagine that game or a version of that game story into, a bunch of set pieces. But
if they
decide
to make a cool sword movie...
Exactly. If they decide to make a good movie, it'll be good. But that has been the pitfall that so many people have like fallen into making those video game adaptations. Like half of them, they're trying to make them as bad as the game would be if it was a movie. But I like if it's a real commitment to full Japanese language and cast, I love that. Because like, I told you guys about Prey and how it was like sometimes they speak in Comanche and most of the time they speak in English and it felt like a real cop-out. It's like, hey, go for it. You know, commit to it.
I was going to say that they're like, well, surely if they start doing it, they'll do it for the whole movie. But you're right. They sometimes that doesn't fucking happen, which is bizarre when you...
Yeah.
Yeah. Hunt for Red October, you just Ghost see of a Tsushima bit, sounds bad.
You see a bit on the screen where it's like just like a menu coming up, like you're in the cinema and it just goes into like audio and just changes to like language English.
Honestly, fuck if they this. Did it that way, fine.
Yeah, that would rule.
No. No, that's stupid.
Ruby, are you invested in this? Did you play through Ghost of Tsushima? Are you invested in this adaptation?
Matt, and I didn't give a fuck or shit about any video game, movie, or TV show except for Sonic.
Yeah.
Because there is so much bountiful and stupid lore in the Sonic universe that they can draw from, including the Sonic Bible, which is not referenced in any game whatsoever.
What's
I only give a shit about the Sonic movies.
What's the Sonic Bible?
So the Sonic Bible was written by this lady way back when Sega was just starting out Sonic and needed an idea of who Sonic was.
Oh, hell yeah.
And the whole like story is completely different to what they ended up going with in the game. There's a whole YouTube video on it. I think it was from Polygon, you know, Brian David Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing was like Sonic was just a blue hedgehog who lived, or he was a normal hedgehog who lived behind a burger joint, and his family of other hedgehogs would like eat the burgers that were thrown in the trash.
All right.
And then one day he absorbed the power of the Chaos Emerald and turned blue and was really fast. And Dr. Eggman was like a father figure to him.
Not to jump and in then at too some early. Point... I know that you're telling us about this, but there's been a, and then one day he turned blue from the Chaos Emerald. Was it in a burger? How did?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
So did the burger shop have a Chaos Emerald in it?
Or did it like do one of those things where it like falls from the sky and like, oh, it lands behind a burger joint, and then you know.
I'm sorry, but
I don't remember.
And then
all I remember is that he absorbed it, and then he became blue and could talk, and I think his dad died as well, and so Dr. Eggman is his like stand-in dad, and they you know grow apart, and there's other shit to it. It's so goofy, but like they haven't touched a single part of that, and there is plenty to go off. So I feel like. They could do
that's it. Insane because even like the comic books and the TV cartoon in the 90s, they went pretty off track from the games, but even they're not getting into living in the dumpster outside of a burger joint.
That's it's really weird.
God, I hope they do.
Every version of Sonic is like has added on this thing, and I don't know why it is, but like in the games it's never there, and then every other thing of Sonic is like, oh, he fucking loves fast food. It's either hot dogs or chili dogs or burgers, but
chili
he loves
dogs.
It.
Yeah.
Everyone can just tell.
Maybe that's from the Bible.
In a stupid movie, he loves vegetables. Yuck.
We've got to read the Sonic Bible.
I know. The chili dog thing, it's like, it's such an American food. Like, I just love the idea of, like, the Japanese creators of him, you know, seeing these little fucking cartoons in the 90s where he's eating chili dogs and being like, what have they done to our beautiful creation? What's this shit they've got him eating?
Are you reading the Bible,
yeah,
Docs?
That's my take.
Totally absorbed.
I'm completely sunk into this Bible. It's not making it make any more sense. I'm gonna this is properly gonna be me studying theology now.
Yeah, I liked Ruby before when you said he's a blue hedgehog, and then you corrected yourself and said, "Oh no, no, hang on, he's originally a normal hedgehog." The two genders of hedgehog, blue and normal.
That's just the two genders in general, blue and normal.
Blue and normal.
Yeah.
Oh wow, they've got a full scan of the Bible.
Because girls are normal and boys are weird and blue.
We're all blue.
Yeah, and that's
blue.
Canon.
Rude.
That's in the Bible.
We're all rude. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Sonic story. Sonic. I'm sorry. Sonny Hedgehog. So when he was a normal hedgehog, he had a name.
All right.
And the Chaos Emerald changed his name?
Yeah, I guess so. He didn't. He was like, "Fuck you, Mom. I'm this scientist's son now." Sonny Hedgehog was born on Earth in the early 21st century. So we're living in a world where Sonny Hedgehog's already been born. In the town of Hardy, Nebraska, population 1,226.
All right, that's a very small town.
It's too small to sustain a burger shop. He and his mother and five sisters live underneath a scraggly hedge beside the local burger joint and subsist on burger scraps, milkshakes, and the occasional slug or bug that crawls their way. I'd wait for a burger.
Yeah.
They are a poor but happy family. Options. They're not poor. They're hedgehogs.
They're from a lower socioeconomic area in terms of hedgehogs.
Unfortunately.
Well, personally, like...
No, sorry, what?
Knowing that every animal doesn't have any money, I call them all poor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All rich.
Hobo squirrel at the front of Adam's apartment before.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Poor.
Unfortunately, Sonny's dad died when Sonny was just a few days old after falling into a gurgling, festering vat of toxic waste dumped in a nearby pond. That's so descriptive.
Bubbling? Gurgling?
Gurgling and festering.
Yeah. The barrel of toxic waste was in the pond.
It was dumped into a nearby pond, so he didn't fall into the barrel, luckily. Imagine how much it would have been gurgling and festering in there. But just into the pond. Mama Hedgehog does her best to keep Dad's memory alive, however, regaling the kids with stories of his goodness, resourcefulness, and great agility.
That man could move.
Your father.
Like your dad could run fast.
I wish you'd have gotten to know your father, kids, because he could cartwheel. He was the fastest hedge runner this town has ever seen, she exclaimed as her family enjoyed tea and mealworms in front of a roaring fire. That doesn't sound...
How do hedgehogs start fires?
Yeah, I don't know. They got resources. I hope all of you will take after him, she said wistfully as she cast a loving eye upon Sonny. Sonny looked up at the framed photo of his father, which stood proudly on the mantle. They live in a hedge, I thought.
Yeah. Hedges have walls, maybe.
Yeah.
It is so weird to read a Bible with confusing inconsistencies. The firelight cast strange yet comforting shadows on the earthen walls and ceiling of the burrow. Burrow, okay.
Okay.
All at once, the face in the picture seemed to snuffle and wink. And then blah blah blah, the dad wants Sonic to be, I'm just trying to see if I can find how he gets the
transition.
It's so good
maybe
just
like
imagining,
look for blue.
Oh yeah, okay. Find and search for blue.
Yeah,
just imagining the lady who wrote this, just like every new bit of Sonic media that comes out, like every game, every like movie, TV show, going in, being all excited, like, surely this is the one where they finally use my contributions. And it's just like, within minutes, it's like, oh, there's not a fucking burger shop in sight. They've dogged me again.
More blasphemy.
Not canon.
This is pre-Blue, but this is to give you a little bit of an idea of Sonny's personality. His rambunctious sense of humor is the way he puts it. His favorite trick was to frequent the local bowling alley and curl up in the ball return, awaiting the grasp of an unsuspecting bowler.
Yeah!
The bowler would shriek.
Pranked!
Must be that darned hedgehog again, the bowler would yell, and the whole team would crack up at the practical joke.
Fuck.
And everybody clapped.
Why are you still going to this bowling alley if there's regularly a hedgehog stinging your fingers? Surely there's like another AMF or something you can go to.
Maybe a strike.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I can't find it. I'm up to descriptions about the whopping beef gloppers that they serve at this burger place. And
fuck. It's turning into erotica.
I think we got it. Maybe we check in with this next week. We can just check in on some little installments.
Yeah,
of it.
I'd love that.
Over the next little while.
That's a great idea. Little sermon every week.
Yes.
Amen.
Well, look, there's a couple other news things. Alone in the Dark is getting rebooted. I was never a big fan of Alone in the Dark, given that I never played it. But I don't know, is anyone in on this?
No, I'm not familiar. No. Like, I know of it, but yeah,
Knox,
never
you would have given it a crack, Knox.
Yeah, they were like, we had the sort of one of those like shareware CDs on our old computer back in the day that had a little bit of one of the Alone in the Dark games. I don't think it was the first one. And it was creepy because it was so like that early style of like low polygon, early 90s creepy CGI box art looking. You know what I mean? Those like weird. I that stuff still haunts me. That style of graphics. So I did find that creepy at that time, but this is just like essentially a different thing. It's a like full reboot with like modern, obviously. Looks and everything, but they're going back to that sort of like early 20th century setting of that first game, which could be cool. It's something that often isn't. I like the Order 1886 is like one of the only sort of that like kind of era game that I can think of in modern times.
BioShock was like more like 40s, 40s, 30s, 40s.
Yeah, I think that so was like it was like the 60s even by the time you're down there, but like the stuff was all like wrecked in the 40s or the 50s. So that like early, it could be cool. And for some reason, the name Alone in the Dark, it from back when video game names were fun and cool, like Sonic the Hedgehog, and Alone in the Dark. But that one that they made in like 2009 or around then was fucking real bad. So hopefully, I have no idea who's making this either.
Me neither. THQ Nordic, apparently.
Right. Yep.
So I don't know. And then Hogwarts Legacy got delayed. So we're gradually losing a bunch of the big hitters from this year. We still got God of War 2, thankfully.
Yeah, I think Forspoken was one of the one. That might have been a while ago now, but slipped into early next year too.
That
Hogwarts game, which like they've shown quite a lot of, so it must be genuinely on the way. I tell you what, people still love Harry Potter over here in Edinburgh, where every second cafe has smaller signs than in years previous saying this is where J.K. Rowling wrote Harry Potter. All those signs have like weirdly gotten a little bit, just a little paper note in the thing.
Okay,
this is where Harry Potter was written. Can't remember the name of who did it, but but definitely
it was
some
Hatsune Miku.
This
is where J.K. Rowling wrote like just Harry Potter. This is the only thing that she wrote here.
She's been
tweeting
from home.
Didn't write anything
else
in this.
Yeah, she was really different back then too. She was like a really, really different sort of person.
We really
vibe.
Wouldn't talk about anything really beyond just what she wanted for breakfast. So we don't know her, but this is where she wrote it.
Can you imagine if there was a cafe, though, with a plaque that was like, this is where J.K. Rowling wrote transphobic tweets? Like, they're like, proud. She was here when she did it.
Yeah, a photo of, like, the CCTV footage, and you just see, like, over her shoulder on her phone, Twitter open, women are the only people that get periods. It's like, this is where it happened, guys. Like, for better or worse, this is where it fucking happened. Right here in this cafe.
All advertising's good advertising as far as we're concerned. You can have bacon or eggs.
Well, boys, it's happened again. We've been sponsored by NordVPN.
What are the chances?
We should point out quickly that we're doing this... we're doing this after we recorded the episode with Ruby. She's not just sitting here in silence for this ad read. We've done
this
afterwards.
That's a funny bit, Tommy. Yeah,
dropped it in.
That's a great bit, Tommy. Say that we're recording it afterwards. Yeah, we haven't just muted Ruby. Wow, she's really angry. She's really angry on the camera.
She's writing on a sign. Oh no, she's turned it around and it says "Yikes!" and now she's fallen off a cliff. Yeah, we're doing it afterwards because we want to jump in the middle of the episode because we are goddamn passionate about NordVPN and letting you know that you should be, you don't have to be passionate about it, but it can be a useful tool.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not passionate about, you know, the lights in my house, but damned if I didn't have them, I'd be walking around in the dark.
You're not passionate about them? You could give or take them?
Yeah.
I'm pretty passionate about my... I got those lights that can change color. I love those lights.
You are passionate about them. Yeah.
I guess the point is that it takes all sorts, and all different parts of the world have different people who could be differently passionate about different things. And if you want to explore that world digitally, you can use NordVPN to create a virtual private network, I believe it stands for, and go travel the world on the internet. And that helps you do it safely and securely.
Yeah. You can watch. What's something that's would have been overseas? Have you been watching Scottish Netflix? Nox?
I have. I watched the last episode of Better Call Saul on Scottish Netflix or on UK Netflix.
There you go.
Goes up here rather than on Stan, and then has the gall to say a Netflix original at the start.
I was about to ask that.
You think that I'm not a man of the world? You think that I can't simply ask my passionate love of my life, NordVPN, about whether this is in fact the case, that this is an original?
Well, firing that...
If you want to pull the wool over the eyes of the rest of the world, or reveal the wool from your eyes that Netflix has tried to put there, you could use NordVPN to flick around the world and see where things are actually made.
Yeah,
originally.
Any of our Scottish listeners, if you want to be getting Better Call Saul direct from the source, they are lying to you, okay? You can get a NordVPN and get on the AMC website and drink it direct from the tap, not with the... I don't know how they're doing it over there, Adam, whether the... That cool theme song starting up and it's bagpipes instead of the electric guitar.
Yeah, Tommy, it's bagpipes instead of the electric guitar. Woo! And if you want to see if that's true, nordvpn.com/filthy, I believe, is where you have to go.
That's right.
Then you get a big whack off.
Yeah, there's an exclusive Filthy Casuals only discount. It's a big old discount off your NordVPN plan, and also 4 months free. So there's a monthly discount on what you pay, and you also get 4 months for free.
Nice.
That's a ridiculously good deal for something that you should just have, like lights and light switches. You should just have it as part of your life if you're on the internet.
It is a
And there's also a 30-day money back guarantee. If for whatever reason you don't want a VPN, like you're an idiot. NordVPN.com/filthy to get a really big discount thanks to us and NordVPN.
Hey. What's up with... this is me looking at a vampire. Hey, what's up with discount? Okay. My man's caped. Our other sponsor today is Manscaped. Yet again, the stars have aligned. And
can you do that every week? Because that's pretty... That's perfect.
No, I'm so exhausted after saying something so cool. Manscaped are back supporting us again, and we're supporting them by telling you the honest truth, which is that they make good products for personal grooming. Specifically, you know, they say they're for men, but I reckon any hair can be chopped away by these fine razor blades.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you think there's a hair that couldn't be?
Could God make a hair so fibrous that he himself could not manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 it?
Oh, man.
Probably not, because the Lawnmower 4.0 is the ultimate. It's basically the god of... personal grooming technology.
I'll make the claim here. I can't wait until summer when my dog is going to need a haircut and I'm just going to fucking set him down in front of that lawnmower 4.0.
To be fair, I do think at the very least take the man in Manscaped to mean like mankind.
Okay.
Man's best friend scaped.
Oh, shit. You've got a point there.
I will say that Manscaped do not endorse using their products on animals.
No.
Neither,
absolutely not.
I think, would there be a path for them to be able to. Even if they decided to want... Oh, I guess horses have to get clipped. Anyway, Manscaped make good stuff for human faces and bodies. And because that's the thing. It's like a genital hair manscaping kind of thing, but it works.
Doesn't have to be just genitals. Could be your butthole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could be your chest, I guess.
Yeah, give me any hair. Part. I used one of mine on the face, one of mine on the balls, and I always get them confused. And they make good products in there at a decent price.
Yeah.
And you can get an even decenter price by using the code FILTHY when you go over there, and you get 20% off and free shipping.
Yeah. It's something that every man should own. As long as you grow body hair, unless you're, I guess, have full body alopecia, then hey, you probably don't need one. But it's genuinely something that every guy should have in their medicine cabinet.
Mm.
It's a great piece of technology. It's the best electric razor I've ever used. Manscaped.com, code be filthy, and the discount be 20%. And shipping is free. I've been seeing some advertising for a little video game that came out recently, and it encouraged me to play it. And I think we've all had a crack at this little game. It's called Cult of the Lamb. I think by advertising, I mean Ruby reviewed it and loved it, and it made Tommy want to play it, and then it made me want to play it, and Adam played it too.
A games
effect.
Review on a major website. Yeah, that would be advertising.
Oh no, we asked you not to do that kind of stuff with Ruby.
Spaghetti goes in the CD-ROM drive of older laptops, so you can't do them with newer laptops. You can't make a spaghetti laptop anymore.
I agree. I agree. I think you're so smart. And I think that's so true.
But Ruby, why don't you kick it off? This is an Australian indie game, from what I can tell, and you've been playing it for I think longer than all of us. What is Cult of the Lamb?
So Cult of the Lamb is a cult management sim cross dungeon crawler made by Melbourne-based studio Massive Monster. They also made, I think, Adventure Pals in the past, which is a lot of fun, but probably not to the scale of Cult of the Lamb. Basically, it's like a mishmash of a bunch of different genres, but they do it in a way that doesn't feel incredibly overwhelming. I got the chance to, play it a bit early so I could review it, yada yada. Before that, I had a preview build that, stopped at a certain point, but I kept playing ahead as much as I could, and then somehow managed to build off of the preview build when I got the full game. They were like, oh, you can't do this, and then I did it and it was fine, so sorry. But I loved it. I really, really loved it. I loved everything about it. I thought the music by Riverboy was fantastic. I thought all the things that you have to do in the game are really well balanced. The art style is just fantastic. The 2.5D that they've got going on is just really well done. Like, I'd say semi-Paper Mario, but at the same time, like, not.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to, take away from Paper Mario these days when you do see the 2.5D, but, it is very that, in a way. And I fucking loved it. I really, really did. It was silly, goofy, yucky, and that's three things that I look for in games that I like. And yeah, I don't go as hard for something as I did with Cult of the Lamb if I didn't like it so much. And I really, really did. There were the odd, not gonna lie, there were bugs. And that's kind of what we expect nowadays with games. We can still be bummed about it or annoyed by it, but there were bugs. I guess part of the system now, and it looks like from all reports they're going to be spending the next year consistently updating it, as well as including free updates and free content, so I'm pretty fucking happy with that. I will say the end game was a little, chunky. I feel like post the ending, there's not much to do other than take care of your cult, maybe go through the dungeons a few times if you want, complete any quests you haven't yet. But at the same time, if there's going to be free content coming out throughout the year, I'm personally satisfied.
Yeah,
because I loved it.
And how long was that
my job?
How long was that initial that playthrough, that up to the end game?
So it took me about 17 hours to finish. That being said, I like stayed in it a lot and spent a lot of time just like hanging out with my cult and, you know, having fun, not trying to like power through the entire game because I had plenty of time to play it. Mm. So I really took it in. But like with my job, I'm getting to a point where I much prefer like a jam-packed, shorter experience, like under 30 hours.
I think we're all on the same page.
Take me hundreds of hours.
Yeah, for sure. Like a 17-hour game, especially an indie game that is, you know, not costing you, you know, like $90. That's like, I think, yeah, we all agree, that's kind of ideal, especially if it is a great game.
That, like, density thing and how much, like, creativity is put in that. That's why I like Neon White so much, because it was doing that sort of thing. I think I agree with you on almost everything with Cult of the Lamb. Like, it's just, it's so, because that the genre that it's in of, like, this kind of, like, oh, it's got, like, combat, roguelike, farm sim management type stuff. Those individual ingredients often are in games that I don't end up connecting with at all.
Mm.
And for whatever reason, this one's done in kind of a straightforward, like, my first roguelike type of way where I actually really enjoyed that aspect of it. I've seen some people like sort of be bothered by the kind of relative linearity of it compared to games that are like this. But I really enjoyed that drive that the game has to, there's just a very clear little circle filling up above every door of like, here's how many more times you're doing this. Here's how many more of your people back home you've got to look after. Like, it's really showing you what's up at all times. And then it's presenting that in such a kind of like, adorable and creative way that I enjoyed that. I'll quickly get out of the way saying that I played it on Switch and that version is the one to avoid if you can, just because, like, do you want to hear, I'll take another vote, do you want to hear my joke about how it runs on the Switch?
I'm gonna say
we
yes.
Both already heard it.
I'm gonna say yes this time.
Okay, here we go. Thank you for voting, everybody. It's a fantastic thing to be a part of a democracy. What is this? Oh, wait.
Is that like your version of a knock-knock joke?
Yeah,
what
yeah,
is
yeah.
This? What is it, Adam?
I don't know. What is this?
What is this game? The worst forklift driver at a mid-2000s DVD warehouse because there's a lot of slowing down and a whole bunch of hitch. That's my joke.
Yes.
Can I tell you, you told us a draft of this joke earlier in the week.
Yeah. And I've been working on it for a few days. I've only played 4 hours of this game.
This is draft two. Okay.
That was so
good. You changed the joke to its detriment. You said the original version was that there were a lot of crashes and a lot of hitches.
Oh, and it has crashed. Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's also so... It's the only thing because I... And the game is, you know, a lot of it is sort of action and dodging-y kind of combat. Mm. Well, it's all presented from a top-down perspective. And is like a lot of other sort of games of this type of
it's very Hades, it's very Death's Door,
right? And
it's
so frustrating because I really like it, and then these technical problems happen on the Switch. But if you can play it on a PC, that would be the place to go.
Yeah, I mean it is weird that a 2D. Yeah, action game is hitching up and crashing on a Switch. I was gonna try and say it's the Switch's fault, given that, you know, it's the hardware isn't fantastic, but it doesn't seem like the game that the kind of game that should be suffering
for whatever reason. I don't know the technical ins and outs of this, but for whatever reason, Unity apparently doesn't work great on the Switch, and this is like made in Unity.
Okay,
but
I did see someone on Twitter.
What is this?
Ask the developer.
Forklift warehouse in the mid-2000s? Because I don't understand what's happening in there.
I did see someone on Twitter asking the developers what... This was just before the game had come out, what the frame rate on the Switch was. And they replied saying it's 30, but we're hoping that we can patch it soon and get it up to 60. So I get the impression that they will be working pretty hard to... Yeah, fix a lot of that stuff that you're talking about.
But, it's that like that Bloodstained game that came out quite a while ago now had a similar thing where it started off being fucked and then got fixed up on the Switch. Like, I think it just wasn't necessarily... making games is hard and it wasn't necessarily priority. But it's still fine on the Switch. It's a little bit frustrating to play it. Like the 30 frames thing doesn't really affect it, but hitching and crashing and stuff like that is, it's annoying to like get hit in a fight because it just has skipped a second.
So I'm playing on PC, and I had heard a little bit, I'd seen this kind of in a, what was it first revealed in? It was maybe the Devolver showcase at E3 or something like that. And it kind of, it didn't really appeal to me when I first saw it. It looked a little bit kind of sort of Happy Tree Friends, and I couldn't really tell what the style of game was. And then genuinely your glowing review of it on Kotaku, Ruby, was what put it on my radar. And yeah, I just have been fucking loving it. And I'm similar boat to you, Adam. Like, these are two genres that I don't dislike. I kind of enjoy them when I play them, but I don't really last terribly long in either of them because I'm always kind of, I'm left sort of wanting a bit more sort of drive and a bit more purpose in both of them. Like The Sim, they're kind of both sort of pretty endless genres, and I kind of, I like more linear stuff. And this, by combining the two of them, it really, it gives each of those elements like a bit more, a bit more impetus and a bit more drive, because you're doing your runs to get better stuff in your cult, and then you're making your cult better to make your runs through the Crusades better. And I saw your review, Ruby, and then I looked into a bit more of it, and really the only negatives I could see people saying about it were like, it's it's not really too much like a roguelite, and I was like, I don't love roguelikes, so this sounds great. I'm up to the final boss. I've sunk so much time into it since starting it on Friday.
Wow, fucking hell.
It's
you never played
it's
games
really,
this much.
Really hooked me.
I'm
loving everything about it. Like, the presentation is so good, and even just the whole conceit of the cult and the things that you're doing is, a coat of paint on these little systems and mechanics that are in, nearly all of these types of games. But the whole, conceit of it being a cult just really, really works for all those things. Like, it gives it such like a nice organic feel. Like, I sacrificed one of my followers to get a bit of extra life in a run, and the person I sacrificed I was married to, so that got me more hearts. Like, the, just the things like that of like, that person would be worth more in a set. All those little things that all, because I wanted the hearts. I'm a cult leader.
Wow.
I'm ruthless.
No, you,
I'm
none of
him.
Us
know I'm killing
that
him.
When we
none of us
it.
Have done that.
That was
this
the
is,
love of your life.
This game is also a personality test, and you failed, Tommy.
Guys, I'm a bit fucked up because I lost my dad when I was young. I grew up in a bin.
did he fall into a lake of toxic liquid?
And then an evil fat man raised me and then turned on me. And so, I'm a bit warped. I have a twisted sense of what's right and wrong.
Look out, Tommy. You're going to turn blue any day now. I've just got a feeling.
J.K. Rowling will be mad if you turn blue. I've been I agree with the initial thing of like that art style kind of not appealing to me either, and seeming that Happy Tree Friends type of thing. And then in motion and in there, and like the little animations that they have for, all of the sort of maintenance-y things that you're doing around your cult, and when you're sacrificing people, even just teleporting back and forth from places, and the it all looks really good in motion, and like that style really clicks and works and doesn't do that type of like cartoon violence thing that can be a bit like, okay, it comes together really well.
You're right, Tommy. I'm surprised you were a bit at arm's length with the style, because it reminds me a bit of Headlopper, the graphic novel series that you and I are both a fan of, especially the designs of like the architecture, and the symbology and all that stuff is very, it's not Happy Tree Friends. It's not even like Adventure Time. It's its own thing. And I really like it a lot. I've sort of liked it since I first saw it. I'm probably the weakest on this game of the four of us, mainly because I think I'm a big Management Sim fan. And I honestly wish that I didn't have to keep going off and fighting a bunch of, like, I'm finding the combat quite easy, quite simple so far. Like, I don't think I've died yet. I've been playing it for like 2-3 hours.
Tell you what'll help, play it on the Switch. Those hitches really add to the difficulty. It's
I'll take out some of my RAM.
More satisfying.
I have seen, just on that, I've seen a couple of people who are, yeah, real, you know, big fans of that genre kind of mention that the default setting that it starts you off on is perhaps a bit easier than people who play a lot of those games might be used to. So I've seen a couple of people say ratcheting it up to just, I think, hard. There's three difficulties, right?
I think there's four, maybe.
Third highest one is the one that feels a bit... Oh, right.
Yeah.
Is the one that feels a bit more... The one above the default is the one that feels a bit more in line with what you might be used to if you play a lot of these kinds of games.
And, like, I'm literally switching between it and Elden Ring, so that's probably my own fault.
Right.
But I do...
Fair enough.
I do enjoy it. I wish that there was a way to... It's funny that... I feel like the combat is the busy work in this management sim combat game. But, like, I love all of the aspects of, like, getting new followers, customizing them, assigning them all their jobs and stuff, like, building stuff up. I love the presentation. The music, as you said, Ruby, is fantastic. Running like a dream on PC. I think I'll probably just... Maybe I will lift up the difficulty one. Because I'm still enjoying the combat, you know, sections to a point, but they feel a little bit simplistic, especially compared to Hades, which I find is like very similar in terms of like that your ranged attack and you know there's a lot of crossover there with the pure mechanics of the combat. It's not quite as good, which is fine because it's doing two different genres. Very well, and Hades was like, you know, a game of the year level game. But I think I'll just have to put some more hours in. I do like it a lot, and I think, it's a really creative and innovative way to combine two genres that feels natural. It does feel natural, as much as I just prefer one of them. It feels like a surprisingly good fit. And, it's a locally made game. This is not a huge indie game. This is not a huge AAA game. It is an indie game, so... I think it's great. I think everyone should give it a crack and support Australian developers.
Yeah, because without a particular preference for either half of the two sides of that loop that you're in for this, I found it pretty satisfying the amount that it divides your time between them, because you're going on these, you know, little combat missions and they're like 7 minutes long, and then you're coming back for about the same amount of time to build a couple new bunk beds and then you're out again. Mm. And that... It was whipping you fast enough between each of the things that I found this really engaging compared to something like Dead Cells is the one I remember never being able to quite gel with as much as other people seem to, because you're really repeating the same thing again and again and doing a run after a run after a run and then having, these two halves of this game really solves that problem for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's just got that thing where for me just every little thing that you're doing is like, oh, now you've got enough stuff to go and, build that shed, or, you know, now that you've got the shed, you'll be able to have a better run through and have better weapons. Again, another thing I've seen a couple of people weren't so hot on was the fact that at the start of each little combat bit that you do, the weapons that you get are completely random. Mm. I've seen some people
I loved that.
Me too. Yeah. It makes it feel very like arcadey and just because they are quite short runs. Like you don't have to be, you know, the thing that stresses me out about that style generally is that it's this kind of semi-endless thing where, you know, you're going and going and going and going. Yep. Whereas, sorry, I cut you off, Ruby. What were you saying?
No, that's okay. Well, that's the thing. Like I feel like with Cult of the Lambs, dungeon crawling aspect and roguelike, I feel like it's almost like an introduction to them even. So, if you are already familiar with them, you can go up to that harder difficulty. But like with it in general, I found it to be very much like, you know, you choose your difficulty, but ultimately... this is your intro to how roguelikes work, which I thought was really neat, especially since the only one that I had really played was Hades. Mm. And I never finished Hades because I am a piece of shit and I didn't have the time. Mm. But, it is similar in the aspect of what genre it fits in, but I feel like it's so much more of like a baby's first roguelike, but without being too easy. Even though some people do find it too easy. But what I liked about the weapons constantly changing, even though, you know, I didn't like some of the types of weapons, like be they poison, vampire, yada yada. I liked those, but there were some that I didn't care for that I can't remember. But I like that it almost forced you to like learn how to be good at all of them.
So
then when you get to a point where you've got more types of weapons, no matter which one you get, you understand like the range that you've got and the time that you've got and how quick it is and or how slow it is, and you have to kind of constantly be adjusting yourself, which I thought was really cool.
It's similar to the Breath of the Wild kind of weapon breaking stuff that makes you experiment with everything, where I find it to be a little, I get a bit more annoyed when, you know, there's some knife that you get early on that you use once and you're like, this is a shit knife. And then I'm like, well, why is it in there? This is a waste of time. But being forced, like in Breath of the Wild or like in this, to experiment with what is in the game is really fun. And totally agree with that baby's first roguelike stuff, because like I've tried to play a bunch in the past, I've never done it, and this one is the first one to propel me through, and I'm hoping it'll be that kind of dam breaking moment where I can go to stuff like Hades and enjoy it.
I mean the because often on the runs you will maybe halfway through or near the end you often will get a bit where you find new weapons that you can replace the one that you've been given at the start. And there were a couple of them, like the hammer, for example, I had only gotten a couple times and really struggled with, and I got it on one run and I was like, oh god, I can't wait until I find another set and I can swap this out. And then by the time I got up to it, I was like, oh, I've kind of figured this out now. Like, this is kind of, you know, I've worked it out and it does a lot of damage. Like, yeah, I'm gonna stick with it. I wasn't just having like a punishing run because I, yeah, had the option of just completely tossing it to the side. Great game. Again, like it, yeah, very similar to Death's Door in a lot of ways, in how the combat feels, and also in the fact that similar time last year, and just was not really on my radar at all until it came out. So just one of those, yeah, really nice surprises that was just like, yeah, I think from what I had seen of it, it kind of looked to me like it was a weird little kind of social thing, like the screenshots of just all these little critters on the screen. I was like, this looks like fucking Habbo Hotel. What is this? Like, it looked like a like an MMOE kind of thing, or
yeah, it looked sick.
That was
yeah. I didn't know it was a roguelike until I literally read the first review of it. I thought it was just kind of more like a Zelda-y, you know, like a classic dungeon crawler. But I like it. I think it's fun. For playing it on normal, it's fun that you can just kind of like cream your way through a few sections and get back to that boss that you're up to, or you know. I do like that about it, and it the combat feels incredibly natural if you have ever played any game like this before, which I think is a bonus. And it just, I don't know, they've nailed the mechanics. It's really well made, I feel like, in every aspect.
One part, I guess, we haven't really talked about as well, is there's like kind of a fun little story going through as well. You're like being used by this kind of devil guy, this creature,
the one who waits.
The one who waits is your boss, and you're going through and defeating his enemies and sort of learning more about their backstory together and stuff, which is unravels in a nice and like the rest of this game, a way that just peppers it through with the right amount to drive you forward to the next thing.
Oh, and you unlock all these little areas on a map that you can go to that aren't just your...
Oh, man, knuckle fucking whatever. What's knuckle dice?
Yeah, knuckle bones.
I've played so much fucking knuckle dice.
There's a little... So so there's a little shack that you go to where you... you play this little dice game, and then you, when you go on little combat runs again, you'll find new people that are just hanging out in essentially a war zone. Yeah. Just like, oh, yeah, anyway, time for me to clear off out of here. I'll be at the shack if you feel like playing some knuckle bones. It's like, why the fuck were you here? There's people getting massacred all around you. It's awesome. I always love a little extra card game or mini little thing tucked away in a game like this. And yeah, this is so, it's a really addictive little dice game where you're trying to match up.
You got three little columns. If you put a number with the same number that the other person has in the column, it deletes their number. If you've got two of the same number, it doubles that. And I think I need to never gamble in real life because I'm fucking this. Knuckle Bones has really got
well,
me.
Well, that's the thing. Like with Knuckle Bones, you know, you can almost draw a correlation to like the roguelike aspect being baby's first roguelike to Knuckle Bones being baby's first mini game because like when I started Knuckle Bones, I was shit at it and I was I kept fucking losing because I had an idea of what I was supposed to do, but then I just kept putting things in the wrong place and got fucked on. And over time, the more I played it, the better at it I got. So when I did unlock all the bad boys who wanted to play with me, I was, you know, beating the shit out of them and it felt good.
I know. I want to play Knuckle Bones for real money. If you want to play Knuckle Bones for real, let's set up a ring.
Don't do it.
Yeah,
that's,
all of that.
That's a really good,
and it's not.
That's
sorry,
a really good point about it, Ruby.
I don't think we mean it as like an insult at all to say baby's first anything because it's like
it
feels introductory because it's so well thought out and designed that like you are being led through it in a satisfying and not necessarily like handholdy way, but like in a directed way. It's a lot more deliberate in what it's asking you to do next than a lot of these type of games, but in a thoughtful and really engaging and fun way.
It's not condescending, but it is. It's like, this is crazy, but it seems like their goal was to make their players have fun. And that's why, you know, it's, they've taught you how to play this game and unleashed you on it. And it's fucking fun to play. And they've nailed it.
I've had an absolute cult of a lamb.
I guess we have to end the episode there.
Yeah, we better wrap it up. Ruby, thank you for bringing Cult of the Lamb to our attention, and thank you for joining us today. People can read your writing over on Kotaku, and you've got your Instagram comics that you do that are great. Is it
I don't do as many of them anymore because I'm so busy with my full-time job. Love my job. Yeah, you can find me at Kotaku Australia as well as on Comics by Ruby. Don't find my Facebook or my LinkedIn. Okay. They're not very good. Okay. I don't post.
Look for we'll start a Knuckle Bones ring, though, for real money. Very soon. Don't tell anyone in authority because I'm pretty sure real money's illegal to play for, but we're going to do it anyway.
Nice. All right. Thank you again for joining us, Ruby. And thanks, guys, for listening. Filthycasuals.com.au for all the stuff we've got going on. The Patreon, get on there and get a bonus episode every week.
Yes.
We've also got the YouTube stuff. We're currently playing through The Quarry. New episodes of that going up every.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Week, and thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time, and as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
if what he thought had happened had really happened, Kintobor had absorbed the evil of the Chaos Emeralds as well as the disgusting shape of the hard-boiled egg. He would awaken as the vilest, most evil personality on the planet Earth, set to strike out at anything in path. Kintobor, or shall we say Robotnik, stirred. The disgusting shape of the hard-boiled egg.